folks, welcome back to Indaba Africa. This is Chris once again. Hello, folks, and welcome back to today, May 4th, 2021. Whoa, almost swallowed my tongue there. It's May 4th, 2021. This is Chris with Chris White Africa here on the Indaba Broadcasting Network. Hope you're having a lovely day wherever you find yourself around the planet today. Lots of headlines to talk about today, lots of news. I had to be very selective as to what we're going to put in the program, what we're not going to put in the program. A few more articles that are not Africa related today, just to bring people up to speed on what's happening around the globe. I apologize for any background noise. Someone's mowing a lawn. I don't control that. But let's get right to the headlines. The South African government has seized 1.4 billion rand in assets from former Eskom executives, contractors, and six companies. That includes Abraham Masango, Franz Lakundi, and three contractors, including a UK citizen who was extradited recently, plus six companies. The toothless African National Congress's step-aside policy for those implicated in corruption scandals has been reaffirmed. Where's Ace Magashule? Still there, isn't he? His 30 days have come and gone. South African citizens are going to be hit with yet another burden courtesy of the feckless African National Congress. It seems that it's likely that South African citizens will have to eat 250 billion rand of accumulated Eskom debt. At the size of South Africa's current economy, that represents 6% of your GDP. 250 billion rand, nearly 17 billion US dollars, or half what Amazon made in the last quarter. Amazon made $8.9 million in profit last quarter. Wow, they could give that profit all to South Africa and to pay off half of Eskom's debt. President Buhari of Nigeria wants U.S. Africa Command to be on the African continent. In a stunning reversal from a country that led the ill-founded, poorly informed decision to lead a charge against the formation of U.S. Africa Command as if they had any role in what the U.S. government does with its internal policy. Nigeria led the charge against U.S. Africa Command in a foolish effort well over a decade ago. And now Nigeria has turned the tables and said they want Africa Command on the continent. Newsflash, President Buhari, don't hold your breath. It's not coming to Africa. No need for it to be in Africa. The Namibian newspaper, one which I frequently use as a source, among others, for news on Namibia, has walked away with all kinds of awards, winning 8 out of 9 journalism awards in Windhoek. Impressive job by the Namibian, which has some very good reporting. Hysteria over Recon Africa, the Canadian company's exploratory Kavango Basin petroleum well, is still picking up steam. Everyone from the National Geographic to every freaking site on the planet is talking about this potential disaster. Very few people talking about the potential to bring revenue to Namibia. That doesn't seem to be on the topic, as the environmental nut jobs seem to have the upper edge when it comes to reporting on this story. No balance in the story whatsoever. Press freedom in Zimbabwe remains abysmally low 41 years after independence. Striking that news stories have to mention that the freedom is low 41 years after independence, 41 years after majority rule. In fact, press freedoms now are far worse than they were under the repressive Ian Smith regime, which is a consequence of its unilateral declaration of independence, eventually put restrictions on press that not even close to what's happening in Zimbabwe today. The Washington Post is carrying the water once again for the Manchurian cadaver, as it reports on a story out of Morocco about imprisoned journalists and makes excuses about the weak, feckless, limp-wristed foreign policy of Manchurian cadaver, saying that he just doesn't have time to deal with it. So many issues to deal with, carrying the water for an administration while attacking the previous administration. Ugandan journalists still face targeting by security services, coming under assault still even this week in Uganda. And President Museveni's son, who's now a lieutenant general, when I knew him, he was a brigadier general. He's now a lieutenant general and still in command of the Special Forces Command. He was in command of it as a brigadier general. Now he's a lieutenant general in charge of it. He has been named in a complaint at the International Criminal Court. The complaint has already been up there for the unlawful abduction, the murder, extrajudicial killings of Ugandan citizens in the election campaign. But now his son is named in a second complaint. The previous complaint was filed by Bobby Wine, the Ugandan musician who ran against Museveni for president. So there are now two complaints at the International Criminal Court. We'll see what can or cannot be done about that. Uganda must decide that it's not going to prosecute and then turn over the courts. The courts really got very few options here. President Chakwera eyes the mining sector as a potential source of revenue to advance the development in Malawi. Recently elected, President Chakwera is taking a close look at policy in his country. He's also looking at labor reform in Malawi. On Sunday, Chad named a new government with new ministers, yet Debe's son, the 37-year-old general, Major General, remains the new president of Chad, undemocratically selected. In a story I previously reported on Indaba African News of the Day, Australian Prime Minister is under fire from all quarters for his heartless and, I would have to think, illegal decision to sanction and fine Australian citizens $66,000 Australian if they deign to return home to their own country from India. He's under a lot of pressure for this, and rightly so. Unbelievable, the actions. When the Trumpster put a ban from travel from China here, it was not for U.S. nationals. Of course, that was part of the problem because some selfish little turds came back to this country, and rather than self-quarantine, they just ran around as if nothing happened and spread the virus. Yeah, forgotten about, isn't it? But that's what happened. But the Australian PM will not let Australians come back in the country, or will fine them $66,000. That's about $50,000 US. Absolutely insane. Now under pressure, as he should be, from his own citizens. This is authoritarianism. It's not democracy. It's not a republic. It is authoritarianism. Japanese journalist has been indicted for fake news in Myanmar as the military junta steps up its campaign against journalists. This Japanese journalist was detained in April, and he's just now been indicted with fake news. It carries a 3-year prison term if he's convicted of fake news. And airlines are dealing with fake COVID certificates. The government is forcing private enterprise to perform a state function and holding them liable if they don't have legitimate. If a passenger comes with a fake certificate, they hold the airline responsible for that. That's unacceptable. That's unacceptable to force. We're not in a state of war. We're not under martial law. No government has the right to tell a private enterprise what they must do. You're not marshaled assets in the wartime. By the way, whatever happened to all that whining about Trump nationalizing, you know, getting the national infrastructure, or using World War II powers to... Why isn't the current president doing that? Germany cancels Oktoberfest for the second year in a row. The wildly popular event takes place in Munich every year from around the 3rd of September, or the 18th of September until the 3rd of October, was canceled last year over concerns over the pandemic. Well, we're now almost 5 months from that date, and Germany's already canceled it. Seriously? Wow. So what are you telling us? 5 months from now, you still won't have this under control? This tyranny must end. China's irresponsible space mission launch to their new space station is coming home. That's right. The Long March 5 Bravo rocket, which was foolishly sent out up into space without the capacity to steer the aircraft, any reserves to bring it back, will fall freely out of the sky at any moment through the atmosphere. And it's so large, it's likely that big chunks of it will hit the surface and endanger lives, unless, of course, we're fortunate enough that it lands in the 70% of the Earth's surface that's ocean. The Chinese, in their irresponsible space program, yet again putting more junk into space and endangering life here on Earth. Someone needs to hold the Chinese government responsible for these horrible actions they take. Remember a few years ago, they fired an anti-satellite missile into space and blew up a satellite, putting tens of thousands of pieces of debris, dangerous debris, into orbit. And Marine Le Pen, the candidate in France's elections, has been acquitted of hate speech in her trial. This stems from a 2015 tweet in which she was accused of hate speech, and she has been acquitted. Not much press on that. And finally, more bad news for Airbus and the A380. Now, I've personally flown the A380. It's an amazing aircraft, but the A380, Malaysia Airlines has decided to retire its entire fleet of 6 A380s, adding yet another carrier to the list of those no longer using this impressive aircraft. Well, let's take a look, folks, at the actual news articles from today. Former ESCON execs, suppliers have assets worth Rand 1.4 billion seized in 3 provinces. Abra, Masango, France, Halukudi, both formerly with ESCOM, lost their homes in terms of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act. It also included 3 contractors and 6 companies hit by the order today. Order also applies to 3 private contractors. Former Tubular Holdings executive advisor Michael Lomas was extradited from the UK. Former Tubular Construction Project CEO Antonio Trindade and businessman Makokpo Kogmotswana. Oh, that's a mouthful. Court-appointed curator Trevor Hill compiled a list of affected assets now restrained. So they can't do anything. Their assets have been frozen over this corruption trial. As I mentioned, Michael Lomas was arrested in the United Kingdom and extradited back to the UK. This is tied to a 745 million rand contract with Eskom, in which supposedly there's corruption. The ANC has reaffirmed their step-aside policy for corruption charge members. Seriously. Are we supposed to take this seriously? I'm sorry, I can't help but laugh. This is the African National Congress. We're supposed to take this action seriously? Do you really think? Okay, let's start with Ace Magashule. Then we can start with the former Durban mayor, who's now a member of provincial government, who gets paid even if she doesn't work. Yeah, this party is so corrupt and so blatantly obvious about it, it's pathetic. They could win awards for corruption. It's unbelievable. And their step-aside policy reaffirmed? Please. A top committee of South Africa's governing African National Congress has reaffirmed that all members charged with corruption or other serious crimes must vacate their posts within 30 days or face suspension. So why isn't Ace Magashule suspended? The statement from the National Working Committee had instructed that letters be written to affected members implementing this decision outlining the terms. The step-aside rule is an important test of Ramaphosa's control over the ANC and his commitment to tackle graft. Indeed it is. And here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. If this is a newsflash to you, here you go. Cyril Ramaphosa does not control the African National Congress. He barely is holding on to power. If there were a vote of no confidence today in the parliament, there's a good risk he would actually lose his job. Now, the ANC can't be trusted on anti-corruption. Ramaphosa's been in office now for 3 years. And what has he done about corruption? Who's been convicted of crimes? Other than a low-level white banker in the VBS scandal. Have Floyd Shivumbu and the other EFF members involved in the VBS bank scandal been convicted and sent to jail? No. And that's because Ramaphosa has no credibility when it comes to exposing or prosecuting graft. Nor does the government of South Africa. Frauds, one and all. Utter nonsense. This is just window dressing and nothing will come of it. And the government of South Africa, and therefore the taxpayers of South Africa, are likely to absorb 250 billion rand of Eskom, the national parastatal electricity provider, or I should say non-provider of electricity. That's 6% of South Africa's GDP. Seriously? 6%. Why are taxpayers who've already been screwed, those who actually pay for electricity, they've paid for it at overly expensive rates, more than it cost, while people stole from the company and Eskom failed to maintain, upgrade, or build new plants. The plants it's built have been wildly overrun on cost, and they have not delivered electricity to South Africans. Why should anybody have to put up with this nonsense? And now you're going to hit them with another $250 billion of accumulated debt from this fossil state parastatal? No. People need to pay attention to what's going on in South Africa, around the world. The world must know. Hashtag the world must know. South Africa is no longer run by a political party. It's run by a cabal of gangsters who do nothing about actual gangsters shooting people with automatic weapons in broad daylight in the most populous parts of the country. It what just a few months ago were safe places to live and work. Absolute insanity. Word came in earlier of another farm attack today, this one in KwaZulu-Natal. Once I get more information on that, we'll report on that as well. Fortunately, both the farmer and his son appear to have survived the incident, although someone was shot in the hand. In a stunning reversal, President Buhari of Nigeria said he was speaking with U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. He requests U.S. move its Africa Command headquarters from Stuttgart, Germany, to Africa. Come again? I'm sorry. Is this the same Nigeria that, this is from Ambassador John Campbell, someone I've interviewed in the past. Did I miss something? Did I miss something here? Let me just sort this out very quickly. So Nigeria, which led the charge, the foolhardy and stupid, moronic, uninformed charge against U.S. Africa Command, because they didn't know what it was. All they hear is Africa and Command. The stunning, idiotic things I heard when we formed Africa Command were, oh, it's going to take our sovereignty. It's neocolonialism. You're going to put bases everywhere. None of that came true, despite the lying leftists who put little blogs out there all the time claiming there are 66 U.S. military bases in Africa. No, there's one. It's in Djibouti, Camp Lemonnier. It's been there. It's under lease. We pay like $50 million a year to the government of Djibouti to use the base. We're not alone. The Chinese have a naval base there. The French have an air base there. The Japanese have an air base there. So we're hardly on our own there. But that's our only U.S. base in Africa. We have built a base in Niger. That's correct. In Agadez, we built a base for the Nigerians. And we currently operate it because Niger wants the resources and can't afford the $15 million a year it would take to keep the base operational. So we both profit from the intelligence gathered, and both Niger and the U.S. But we have no bases other than Camp Lemonnier in Africa. And there was no neocolonialism. As I predicted, I correctly stated back in 2007 when the command was stood up as a sub-unified command of U.S. European command, I clearly told people repeatedly in the press, on the radio, all over, that this command will be responsible for the full spectrum of military operations. That includes things like humanitarian assistance, disaster response and relief, pandemic response, military medical visits, veterinary visits, combined exercises between nations, and if it comes to it, conflict. Yeah, that's right. We would also be involved in conflict. But you'll find that the U.S. has been involved with troops in very few conflicts in Africa, with the exception of special forces being involved in Somalia, Niger, and Mali. Beyond that, they've not done anything. But you still see these little turds running around all the time. Oh, U.S. military, thousands of people on the continent. And then neglecting to point out that 75% of the people they're talking about are based at Camp Lemonnier in Djibouti at our base. And that number fluctuates ups and down anywhere between 1,200 to 4,800 any given time in history. So now, because of the chaos in the Sahel, Nigeria thinks it's appropriate for the U.S. military to put its base in Africa. You know what? President Buhari, you're wrong. You're simply wrong. There's no call for the United States Africa Command to be anywhere on the continent of Africa. As I said rather sarcastically in 2007, can you imagine the first operational mission for a new U.S. Africa Command if it came to Africa would be to do a non-combat and evacuation operation of its own staff because a country fell apart? Quick, name for me countries in Africa that never had a coup, a civil war, or guerrillas undermining their government. Okay, I'll give you time. Did you say Mauritius? Did you say Botswana? And then you ran out of countries? Pretty much accurate. Putting U.S. Africa Command in Africa is unnecessary, and it's a fool's errand. So I'm sorry, President Buhari, but not going to happen. And we'll see where it goes from there. The Namibian has won a slew of journalism awards. Awesome. First National Bank of Namibia were the sole sponsors of the event. The journalists contested 9 categories. And let's see, they got namely the best investigative expose was won by the Namibian's Chuvene Emmanuel. Best reporting on health matters won by Namibian Charlotte Nambadja. Best business innovation and finance reporting won by New Era's Lerato Khobaitsi Slinger. So congratulations, someone else won. Political reporting governance issues won by the Namibian's Tilene Mongudi and Matthias Haufiku. Best sports coverage won by the Namibian's Timo Shihepo. And agriculture and environmental reporting won by the Namibian's Sonia Smith. Photojournalism also won by Tati Nilenga. And the final category is disqualified. Interesting. Well done by, or seven, yeah, 7 of the 9, not 8. So well done by the Namibian, which has proved to be a very good source of reliable news and also has done an amazing job of investigative journalism exposing the fish rot scandal and other corruption scandals taking place in King Gab's government. So well done to them. Congratulations. Meanwhile, in Namibia, there are continuing efforts by the loons to misrepresent Recon Africa's petroleum exploration well in the Kavango Basin. Endless, breathless stories about the environmental damage from a single well, and also wild projections of 4 billion barrels of oil with virtually no discovery of oil to date. That's just an expectation based on geology. Let's calm down, let's take a breath, and think about the poverty, the extreme poverty of Namibians. Now, you have to have an honest government in place to make sure the revenue goes where it should go. So that is a legitimate concern, but you should be concerned about that, not about oil exploration. Canadian oil firm thinks it struck big. Some fear it could ravage a climate change hotspot. Kavango is not a climate change hotspot. Syringa trees rise out of the Kalahari sand in the wild expanse of Kavango East as a humid heat warms of afternoon showers. It's easy to imagine this place has looked the same for hundreds of years. Well, I'd say tens of thousands of years, not hundreds of years. There's the Recon Africa oil rig in the middle of the Kavango East region. The oil field that Recon Africa wants to harness is immense. The firm has leased more than 13,000 square miles or some 30,000 square miles of land in Namibia and Botswana. The find, potentially containing 12 billion barrels, last report I saw said 4 billion. So the numbers just keep climbing. And they have not proven anything yet. We know we have discovered a new sedimentary basin. It's up to 35,000 feet deep and it's large and very expansive basin. Yes, but it's unproven as of this point. And they're still losing their minds over at the environmentalists. How about we get a little more data before we start losing our minds, folks? Right. Journalist, Zimbabwe's press freedom suffers even after independence. This comes as a surprise to these folks. Jeffrey Moyle reports, on the eve of World Press Freedom Day, Zimbabwean scribes claim increase in cases of arrest, intimidation during pandemic. Yes, famously Hopewell Chinono has been arrested repeatedly, locked and chained to the floor of a prison for up to 45 days in inhumane, illegal treatment by the government of Zimbabwe. Not a shocker. But as we mentioned, International Press Freedom Day, this has come up like a few other press stories. The Washington Post carrying the water for the Manchurian cadaver's feckless, useless, weak foreign policy by making excuses for him and blaming the former president's recognition of Western Sahara. It has nothing to do with journalists, but they make the point of mentioning that. Jeff Bezos' personal little propaganda outfit here, the Washington Post right there. One of the more awkward foreign policy problems inherited by the Biden administration is Trump's reckless recognition in December of Morocco's claim to disputed territory of Western Sahara. And then eventually we get down here, all the way down here, till we finally find out that they're complaining about the editor of the newspaper Akhbar al-Yum and Omar Radi, an award-winning investigative journalist who've been in prison since last year without trial. Yeah, so once again, the Washington Post carrying the water for leftists instead of reporting the news objectively. Now, that was an op-ed piece, but just because you write an opinion article doesn't mean you can be devoid of facts or you can twist facts. The topic of the article is not the Trump relationship with Morocco. The article is about journalists in prison and what the Biden administration is not doing about it. Meanwhile, Ugandan journalists are continuing to be under assault, being attacked by security forces repeatedly throughout Uganda. In Uganda, journalists have reported they've come under attack while doing their jobs. Two journalists say they were beaten last week as they tried to cover a protest over power outages. Dozens more were beaten during a run-up to elections in January, as we've talked about and reported repeatedly on the old channel and this channel. On April 28th, protests broke out in the central Uganda town of Kayunga as locals demonstrated against a two-week power outage. Journalists were sent to cover the demonstration, including Amon Kayanga, who reports for a local television station. He pulled out a small video camera, started speaking. Demonstrators, police, and military were deployed to halt the protest. And Kayanga and Teddy Nakaliga, a female journalist, found themselves under attack. They started beating us. We asked them why they're beating us. They're not giving us a reason. They broke my camera. My phone was destroyed. They had some sticks. They whipped us. They're chasing us away. We had nothing to do. And there you have, folks, the extrajudicial world of Uganda. Speaking of extrajudicial, the commander of the Special Forces Command in Uganda, the son of President Museveni, has now been named in a complaint at the International Criminal Court at The Hague. Muhoozi Kainerugaba, it's the lieutenant general now, leads the Special Forces Command. And lawyers acting for the victims of a wave of abductions and torture by security forces in Uganda have named senior military commanders, including the president's son, in a complaint to the International Criminal Court. Prosecutors at the ICC are already reviewing an earlier submission from opposition politician Bobby Wine, the former Reagan Center, describing widespread human rights abuses before the presidential polls held in January. And of course, Museveni claimed victory in that election. On to more promising news as we move across to the warm heart of Africa, Malawi, folks, the warm heart of Africa. Malawi's President Lazarus Chakwera is eyeing the mining sector as potential means to raise revenue to improve development in the very densely populated country with a strange affinity or attachment to poverty. It's had plenty of resources in the agricultural world, yet over the decades, it still remains a very poor country. Perhaps mineral wealth will make a difference, or will it be the resource curse? We really don't know. But President Chakwera said that he's announced plans to reform the country's mining sector because it has been delivering nothing of any consequence to the country, either in tax revenue or in actual gains for Malawians. There is illegal gold mining taking place. You can see some small-scale mining activities taking place right there in that photograph, and that is a concern. They've issued over 250 mining licenses, but they don't have a mining industry. No returns to speak of, they're saying here. So in 2018, they cracked down a gold mining site outside the capital that was attracting foreign buyers from neighboring countries, burnt down the mining site and shacks, and also arrested some illegal miners. But that's President Chakera was focused on that, as well as he's also focused on improving working conditions for labor employees. He's announced reforms his administration will take to create better conditions and rights for workers in his country. Presiding over commemoration for International Workers' Day Saturday, he noted that the decent work environment, workers' rights are compromised in Malawi. Well, I can't disagree. I'm having lived in Malawi. I can't disagree with him, but I don't think that's the highest priority. I think the higher priority is to generate a sustainable economy that's diversified and brings a return so that people can begin to earn a living wage. I think that's a far more pressing problem than labor reforms, but that's President Chikere's focus for now, so perhaps that's what he wants to take care of. Meanwhile, in Chad, the military government has announced its ministers, and this is the government now under the 37-year-old two-star major general, son of Idriss Deby, who was killed in a conflict with rebels just a few weeks ago. So they've announced it, but opposition folks are not happy with it, not happy with it at all. Chad's military council announces key ministerial post. The transitional military council pressed ahead Monday with solidifying its hold on power after announcing a new government over the weekend that kept key ministries in the hands of allies. Mahamat Idriss Deby, 37, was put in charge of the Central African country earlier this month after the military announced his father had been killed by rebels on the battlefield. Political opponents immediately decried the army's move as a coup d'etat, taking to the streets to protest. And I'd have to agree with them. This is not good. The AU sent a fact-finding mission to Chad. What are the results of that? I haven't seen anything publicly released on that yet. If they are, I need to go look a little bit harder. But we're waiting to find out what the fact-finding results were. By the way, you didn't need to send people to Chad to do that. Unless you're trying to rack up frequent flyer miles, I can tell you, democracy is gone, the republic has been suspended, and there's a military junta running the country. The Australian Prime Minister is under attack, under siege for his idiotic, boneheaded announcement that he would fine Australian citizens $66,000 if they deigned to return home from India to Australia, leaving them to their fate, putting them at risk. Those who don't have anything to do with the pandemic are at grave risk in a country where the pandemic is raging like a wildfire. But the Prime Minister of Australia doesn't seem to care about his own citizens and also seems to think that he's an authoritarian dictatorial power and he can do what he wants. Huge backlash against the Prime Minister. Australian Prime Minister backs down on jail threats as India travel ban backlash intensifies. The backlash intensified Tuesday to Australia's threat to jail or fine citizens fleeing India, prompting Prime Minister Scott Morrison to play down the risk of penalties after a former cricket star accused him of having blood on his hands for banning thousands of Australians in the coronavirus-hit country. The government's announcement that citizens returning to Australia after recently spending time in India could face 5 years in jail, a $50,000 U.S., $66,000 Australian fine, or both has sparked criticism from across the political spectrum. Doctors demand the policy be reversed. Advocates argue it violates human rights. Legal scholars say it probably runs afoul of the law. Political opponents have dubbed it racist. Several members of his conservative coalition have come out against it. Even right-wing columnists have slammed the sanctions, as did I, among the first around the globe to report this idiocy. What kind of moron is Morrison? Good question. Of course, this is a country where we see people arrest pregnant women on their way for an ultrasound, invading their home, putting them in handcuffs, and taking them away for posting that people... encouraging people to go to a demonstration, which is her constitutional right. Japanese journalist has been indicted after he was detained in April by the military junta in Myanmar for spreading fake news. Japanese freelance journalist detained by security forces in Myanmar since mid-April was indicted Monday on a charge of spreading what the military junta views as fake news, the Japanese embassy in the South Asian country said. Yuki Kitatsumi, who's 45, could face a jail term up to 3 years if convicted under the penal code as amended after the February coup. And ladies and gentlemen, this is what fascists and totalitarians do. They squash dissent by imprisoning journalists or threatening journalists. We saw it under the Obama administration when James Rosen's career was nearly destroyed and they illegally spied on him. We've seen it happen many other places. And we've seen it happen with tech giants censoring and canceling content from people that they don't want the world to hear from. And this is what happens when people don't have the strength of conviction and the strength of their ideas. If your ideas are weak, you strike out at dissent. If your ideas are strong, then you'll win the argument. It's as simple as that. So the military junta arresting this journalist who was covering events in Myanmar is quite disturbing. Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal reports that airlines are struggling with the mandate from governments to prevent people with fake certification for the virus to travel. Fake COVID-19 certificates hit airlines, which now have to police them. Test results often required to fly across borders can be easily manipulated. That's true. Airlines are battling a scourge of passengers traveling with falsified health certificates. The documents are often the test results required by many countries on arrival. International Air Transport Association, or the IATA industry body, says that it has tracked fake certificates in multiple countries, from France to Brazil, Bangladesh, and Afghanistan. Border control authorities and police forces have also reported arrests of people selling documents in the UK, Spain, Indonesia, and Zimbabwe. Well, I guess that goes a long way to dispelling the myth that the Nigerians are the world's best forgers. That stereotype can be thrown to the side now, because Nigeria was not mentioned at this at all. Yes, folks, and in addition to that, as I mentioned, Germany has canceled Oktoberfest yet again. Nearly 5 months before the event even takes place, they've canceled Oktoberfest. What is wrong with these people? Are they trying to tell us they can't handle us? Usually gets about 6 million visitors each year. I've been to Oktoberfest. It was quite an experience. That's when I saw the Südweste, Deutsche Südweste, the ethnic Germans from Namibia were at the Oktoberfest in 1984 that I attended, and they're having a great time on the table. Really enjoyable experience. Bavarian officials Monday canceled Oktoberfest for a second year in a row over concerns of the pandemic, saying there are too many risks in hosting the celebrations, which bring in visitors from around the world during a global pandemic. Bavarian Governor Markus Söder said it was heavy hearts that they decided to call off the festival, which the state is known globally, but that with corona numbers still stubbornly high and German hospitals already struggling, it had to be done. So now you are Nostradamus, and you're predicting that 5 months from now you still won't have this under control. Really? We'll be approaching 2 years at that stage. Approaching 2 years. The irresponsible conduct of the Chinese space program launching parts for their space station in a rocket that did not have reserves to allow them to steer it into controlled descent is shocking, but it's not surprising. This is, after all, the Communist Chinese Party that does this and sends debris up as if the world doesn't matter. Shocking behavior, but nothing surprising. The Long March 5B rocket, which went into the space on Thursday, will come descending and careening back to Earth at any moment. It could fall out of orbit right now, an hour from now, 5 days from now. But it is in a decaying orbit, and it will fall back to the Earth, and we don't know where it's going to land. China's Long March 5 Bravo rocket is unpredictably falling back to Earth after launching as part of a new T-shaped Chinese space station on Thursday. There you have it. Unbelievable, folks. Unbelievable. But that is what they do. That's their thing. As I mentioned previously, France's opposition political leader, Marine Le Pen, the daughter of the famous right-leaning National Front leader, she is now the head of the party, and they've renamed the party, but she was charged with hate speech over a tweet in 2015, which has gone in her favor. Although there was a trial, they weren't seeking much from her. The charges stem from a tweet in late 2015 in the wake of the Paris terror attacks in which Islamists killed 130 people. Le Pen posted three images of atrocities committed by the so-called Islamic State terror militia, including one of the beheaded U.S. journalist James Foley, which Le Pen claimed highlighted what she said was the absurdity of comparisons of her far-right political party, the National Front, which is now called the National Rally, to the Islamic State, which was being done. And there's no sanction on people who made those fraudulent accusations about this party in France. The prosecutors had sought a fine of 5,000 euros or $6,000, far less than the maximum sentence of 75,000. But she came out. She's likely to face Emmanuel Macron in the 2022 French presidential elections. So now she's free to pursue that. And finally, folks, as I mentioned, the A380, things are looking a little bit dicey for the A380 program as yet another airline decides to retire its fleet. Malaysia Airways has six A380 Airbus, these massive super jumbo liners, which I've flown on. They're amazing. I've flown out of OR Tambo back to Europe, to Paris, and also to Frankfurt. Quite amazing aircraft as a passenger and very effective. But it really is a niche product. They thought they would make this for these big spoke and hubs around the world, and it has not worked out that way. It has not worked out that way. The only reason Malaysia Airlines still has its six A380s is because there's not really any market for them. The secondary market has disappeared, and only one major airline is actually dealing with the A380 at this point, trying to grow, and that's Emirates, which has a big hub, and it works well for them. But basically, it's a niche market. No one else can use it. And there you have it, folks. That's the news. I did say we had a lot of headlines and stories today. That's the news for today, the 4th of May, 2021.